Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
Hi Coach Steve, I am so good. How are you?
I'm well. Like every week, Nick, this is an exciting week. As of today, we've completely wrapped up our voting process. So the public voting is now closed. We've had hundreds of people come and vote for their favorite transformation. It's both for Max and for Maxine. And now it's time for the judges to step in. So they'll be coming in and completing the judging process. And we find out tomorrow. So that's Wednesday, the 4th of May, Star Wars Day. We find out the top 50. Nick, the top 50, always one of my favorites. You know, yeah, of course, we love to celebrate the top 10, the top three, all those things. But the top 50 is such a wide pool of stories. A wide pool of stories, because that's what the challenge is about. It's all about the story and the journey that someone has taken, where they've invested time, invested energy to improve their health, improve their body composition, improve who they are. And that is often represented in the top 50. So we have 50 guys, 50 girls, 100 stories, where it's so unique and individual to that person. And I always love seeing the top 50 and then going through and reading some of their journal posts that they've made, the stories that they have written up in their profile, and even having a cheeky little stalk on social media about who these people are. So that comes out Wednesday, the 4th of May, tomorrow. How exciting.
Well, I'm excited for everyone, and congratulations if you do make it into the top 50. And if you didn't, that's okay too. Your journey is just as valid. And good luck to everybody. I can't wait to see.
Yes, I can't wait. And then on Friday, Nick, on Friday, that's May the 6th, we have our awards night, where I promise I'm going to sort out my drum roll.
Yeah, I'm good for it.
Yeah, one of us will have to sort out our drum roll. And we'll make it work. And that's going to be kicking off on Friday at 7:30 p.m. That's Melbourne time. And it's going to be live streamed to our Facebook social hub. So if you haven't already, make sure you come and join us on our Facebook social hub. And you got to find out at the same time as everybody else who has made our top 10, who's taken out first, second, or third place, and also who's taken out the Community Award or the People's Choice Award, and all the other the fun events that happen on the awards night. So again, that's 7:30 p.m. Melbourne time. Live stream to our Facebook social hub.
Yes, and we always get dressed up, don't we?
Oh, yes. Or whatever clothes that fit us, because you know what the bulking life is like, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. So, whatever fits my gun.
Yes. Now, look, if you can't join us live, that's cool. There will be a recording. So straight after the event, you'll be able to watch the event if you'd like to. And there will be also links available to go and view the winners or the finalists on our website as well. So you'll be able to view the finalists tomorrow, Wednesday at 2 p.m. So that's the top 50. And then on the Friday after the awards night, it's probably around 8 p.m., you'll be able to go to the challenge website and have a look at who's taking our top 10, top 3, 1, 2, 3. And even read their profiles and those types of things. And maybe it is you, maybe it's somebody else. But yes, there will be lots of ways that you can view our finalists and celebrate with them, or celebrate yourself if you are one of our finalists.
Yep, super exciting. Good luck to everybody. Can't wait to see. Yay.
Now, Nick, talking about gun shows, I need to make this public.
Okay, I'm scared.
You have out-angled me in too many photos with our recent photo shoot for the M Challenge.
Oh my gosh, that's actually like, I think you've just made my day.
Well, look, it needs to be said that.
Is it out-angling or is it outgunning?
No, outgunning, Nick. You are clearly bigger than I am, and well-rounded physique, and you out-angled me in every way, and I should be ashamed at my photo shoot.
What? do you like how you can see each head of my of my delts, like you know what I mean, like all the four different ones. Did you see that?
Three different ones, but that's okay. Yeah, yes. Three.
What's the fourth one?
Well, there's three heads of delts, Nick. You got the front, the back, and then the side.
No. Okay. Oh God.
Yes. No. So we have been spending lots of time developing the content for the new M challenge. So yes, we are still getting lots of individuals asking us when the next challenge starts. Still, we cannot give you a solid date. It is likely going to be towards the end of May. However, we may have to last minute, you know, push it back 1 week or even bring it forward 1 week. So nothing's really set in stone, but at this stage it's going to be towards the end of May, which would be the M challenge kicking off. And you'll be seeing a whole bunch of new photos, new exercises, new programs, Nick, new programs, and a whole different view of the challenge. So there will be some things that will be familiar with the Max and Maxine challenge as we transition to the M challenge. And there will be some things that will be brand new and exciting when we transition into the M challenge, the mobile challenge, the muscle challenge, the whatever M we want to make it on the day, M challenge. It's exciting. It's exciting times.
Yeah, it's definitely worth the wait. Like, I think, you know, quality takes time, and we're working really hard on it. So we can't wait to show you and also go through it with you for our first time as well. So it's very exciting as fitness professionals to have something new to work with.
That's right. And like we said, I think it was last week in our show, the app is going to be a living, breathing thing. It's going to be developing over time. So the first version of the app might not be, the very last one. And we are keen on more and more updates as more individuals come through, use the app, think about features that they want. And, you know, the challenge is all about our community and very crowdsourced. So if you download the app, start playing around with it and think, oh, it'd be really cool if we had this, let us know, because we want to know so we can build those features and make this the best thing that's going around.
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. And thank you all for your support and for waiting. And it's worth it. It's like a cool restaurant that you have to wait for.
We got a waiting list happening, a line out the front.
Because we're so cool.
Yeah, we're like one of those exclusive clubs, you know, there's a line out the front.
And then you ring up and you say, can I get in a bit earlier? And they say, no, we're not ready yet for you. But as soon as we promise you, it's going to be epic.
It's going to be good. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Nick, let's move on to our first segment here today, our non-scale victories, our NSVs. And remember, our NSVs are those wins that might not be related to our body weight or the numbers on the scales. And if you experience an NSV, firstly, celebrate that, because, you know, these NSVs are things that, you know, keep us on track, keep us motivated, keep us in line with our goal. And if you do find an NSV and you want to celebrate it, you can post about it on social media. So you can post about it on our Facebook social hub, post about it on Instagram, just tag the M challenge and we'll be able to see it. And when the challenge is running, you can post about it on places like the forum or your journal. So we have found a couple this week, but it has been quite limited because most of us are going on and celebrating our, you know, amazing transformations that have occurred. So Nick, take us away. Who have you found this week?
All right. So Bryce Durham, come on down, Bryce. So Bryce says, for my first challenge, I'm pretty happy with my results. So that's good already. I completed every workout and pushed myself each week. I've learned a lot about nutrition and my diet. And while I wasn't as strict as I could have been, I'm happy that I still enjoyed my food throughout the 12 weeks. So that's a win. I think I'll touch on this later with my coach's corner, but I think finding that ability to incorporate fitness into your life in the way that suits you is a recipe for longevity, which is what you want, because it's consistency and longevity that wins in the end. So good on you, Bryce. Because often we see that anyone, unless you're doing that, you know, thing to win and get your six pack and your veins everywhere, which is that's a sort of something that can go away quite quickly. It's a transient thing, whereas this one here is something that will continue on. So well done, Bryce.
Yeah, well done, Bryce. I love that you've spent some time to learn about the challenge and learn about things like nutrition and dieting. And, you know, you've achieved something really amazing by completing your first challenge. And we hope that it's not the end of your challenge experience or the end of your fitness journey. So go, Bryce.
Yeah, go, Bryce. Go. Stay. Yay. All right. Arthur Foman. I hope it's either Foman or Foreman. FOMO for Arthur. I've renewed my body. and empowered my mindset and rejuvenated my life. Well, I mean, hello, that should be in a blurb for us, really. I've reduced my risk of developing heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. I've strengthened my immune system to fight any diseases, germs, or viruses. I'm back in control of my life. This challenge is for anybody of any age, no experience necessary. I aspire to inspire before I expire. This is crazy, Arthur.
What a line. I love it.
Where you are now, so I once was. Where I am now, so you can be. You're never too old. It's never too late to make a change for the better. See it, believe it, achieve it, just do it. Arthur, where have you been my whole life? Oh my gosh, I feel like just going out to the shed and lifting some weights right now.
Yeah, I love it.
I really think that that one speaks for itself. I mean, I can't really add to that because anything I add will take away from the beautiful verses that we have.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a bit of poetry there, Arthur. That was beautiful.
Ian a run for his money.
Yeah, I aspire to inspire before I expire. What a wow.
I know. Why didn't we read this before we got our new T-shirts made up?
Yeah. Quote Arthur on our new T-shirts, I reckon.
I'd have to say, because, look, to be honest, out of anything, a six-pack and stuff, we love our six-packs and that's all great, but this sort of stuff is the very core of life. So Arthur's figured that out. And really, you want to start to develop good habits before it's too late and before you develop sort of diseases, things like that within your body. If you can get control of it, that is where you want to head. So I'm amazed. I love it, Arthur.
Congratulations, Arthur. Arthur Shakespeare, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon.
I found a couple this week, Nick. The first one goes to Michael Taylor. And Michael writes, well, I finally completed the challenge again after a few failed attempts over the years, and I feel great. We'll continue the journey to a more healthy and balanced lifestyle from here on out. I will never go back to what I was before this challenge ever again. Whew, Michael, I love it. And I think I just love that first part where I finally completed the challenge after a few failed attempts. And that really highlights just the win that is, because, you know, just like, quitting something, let's say quitting smoking, you can try, and you only fail when you kind of give up trying, right? Mm-hmm. And someone like Michael has tried the challenge and for whatever reason, he couldn't complete it. Maybe life got in the way, it was too challenging, it wasn't the right time. But then now he's finally found the right environment to support the challenge and complete the challenge and get this amazing result. And he says that he's never going back to what he was before the challenge. So big congratulations to Michael.
Well, every single day is a new day. So if you are thinking that you've failed or anything like that, it seriously just takes the next minute to change your attitude. So I love that, Michael. You've done it. That means that you've now set yourself a new precedent, really. Like you cannot not do it, not complete it anymore because you've done that.
You cannot not.
Which, yes.
Double negative on purpose. Love it. All right, Nick, last one here. We have Tracy Berry. And Tracy writes, so happy. I've achieved my goal. And I had to look up what the goal was, Nick, because Tracy didn't write down her goal. So after a little bit of stalking, she writes of being under 60 kilos. That was her goal. So a bit of a scale victory, sure, but she's achieved her goals. And she's also written, I have loved this process and so proud of myself. It's taken 5 years for me to get back this body, right? And I think I love that part because similar to Michael, she's taken some time. You know, maybe the challenge in its 6-week structure or 12-week structure is, you know, a little bit misleading where we often see that 12 weeks and go, wow, look what that person did in 12 weeks. But we often forget about the whole story that individual went through, you know, maybe failed attempts over the years, or it's taken 5 years to get to that 12-week journey. So big congratulations for Tracy for sticking it out over that 5 years and getting 5 years of results in 12 weeks because of the lessons that she's learned and finally achieved her goal of being under 60 kilos.
That's amazing. And I think that also it's worth noting that within that journey, Tracy did not give up. Just say the scale was different to what she wanted it to be, which it would have been over that time. She just kept going. And that's the non-scale victory in that as well, because you've got to have those goalposts before you get to your ultimate goal. You have to have those little things. So like if I'm swimming in the sea, I have to get to one of those yellow poles before I get to my destination. So it's little benchmarks along the way, I think. Well done.
Well done, yes. Mm-hmm. So yes, big congratulations to all of our NSV participants this week, and also everyone who has participated in the NSVs over this January challenge. Also a big congratulations to everyone who's just even participated in that January challenge. You should be so proud of even just putting energy towards improving your body composition, or even just improving your outlook in terms of your fitness and your health. So yes, big congratulations to everyone listening right now.
100%. This is a celebratory podcast. So congratulations to everyone, no matter where you are in your journey.
Nick, let's move on to our next segment here, the Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Well, today I would just like to chat about, I want you to have a think. It's a perfect time between challenges to have a bit of a think about this. And I think it's really worth noting as somebody who's now, you know, within the fitness space, you can consider yourself somebody, even if you've never lifted weights before, and then in the challenge you've started, or you've started walking, whatever it is, you've taken the right steps towards, you know, being healthier and better all round in terms of your overall health and perhaps nutrition as well. So I want to ask you to think about this. What is your fitness identity? Now, that sounds a bit strange, because you might say, well, so I turn up to the gym and I go home. So that might be your identity. It might be that it's something that you do just to stay on top of things and to get a little bit healthier. And that's fine as well. But if you think to yourself, what is it that I want to achieve? Where do I sit on this? So, and you can also move with this. This is not something that is solid. It can move as you move in life, and it can go up and down and be all different. So I want you to think about this. So say for me, when I first started to dabble in fitness extra than what I did before, I saw myself as a triathlete. So I acted like a triathlete. I ate like a triathlete, and then, you know, moving forward into powerlifting, I would eat like a powerlifter, and then I would say probably closer to a bodybuilder now, and so I adopt those behaviors. So I want you to think about that. But what it's really important to think about is, what do you actually like to do? Because if you're trying to be something that you're not, which a lot of people do because they get caught up. That was like me with triathlon. I thought I loved it. I love some aspects of it. But then when it came down to it, I didn't really want to do all the different training that was involved for a long, long, long time. Sometimes I would go, I don't really want to go on a long bike ride. So it was like, in the end, what do you actually like to do? That's what gets you to the next goal. And what are your goals around this? So if you can set some goals in place. So say for me, like nobody, including even COVID, everything, nobody can take my weights away from me. That's something that's like a non-negotiable for me, and I love it. And everything else, competitions, everything else can really go if it has to. I don't see myself, the extra bit on stage, the bit with the bikini, all of that sort of stuff, that is so ultimately not what I'm on about, because it's something that somebody else can take away from you. Whereas something like weights, that is where I sit. So that's me. You've all got to think about your own goals. I love to think about also having a like-minded community around me. So for example, like working with yourself, Steve, you and I both love lifting weights. We'll have a chat about that sort of thing. That's enough for me. Like, my work environment's very supportive of lifting weights. It's basically what we do. And, you know, I surround myself with other people at the gym that have the same feelings. So that makes me feel good. I don't feel like I'm doing the wrong thing. Whereas, you know, if you're somewhere that they go, oh gosh, those people, they do it too much, you know, you can start feeling like you're not on the right track. So like-minded community is really important. Are you doing it for you? So once again, I'll say with the triathlon one, I think I was doing it when I was younger because I liked to see my kids watching at the side, and I thought I was just, whoa, it was something really exciting, but it didn't really fulfill me after a while. So have a think about doing it for you. So for me, like beating the last time I went into the gym with those weights, that just means a lot to me. And that's something that I will do whether someone's watching me or not watching me. Can you still see yourself doing it in 1, 2, 3 years from now or some form of it? That's another thing. Because if you are a runner and that's what you love, then supplement your running. Make sure that you do your, you know, your stretching, your weights that support everything around that. But be a runner. You don't have to be a heavy weightlifter or anything like that. It's all about finding your identity. And also, what is your internal dialogue around this? You know, how do you actually approach this and how do you treat it? Say, for example, with me, I always tell myself I lift heavy weights. I love to do that. And I also supplement, you know, all the rest of my training around doing that, supporting that. It's not that every single day I go in there and bust out a PB, but every single thing that I do is kind of heading towards getting my own personal best. And the bodybuilding side of it is a bit of fun for me. I am never going to be like, you know, an Olympia person, but what I am going to be is pretty bloody good at lifting heavy weights. And that's always my grounding and what I come back to. So that's what I tell myself. And that is actually what will get me out of bed on the days that I really don't want to, on the days that I've had no sleep, on the days that, you know, whatever's happened in life. That's something that I actually enjoy and I fall back to, and nothing can take that away from me. So, I just want you to have a think about that, because that is what's going to promote longevity in your life. And you can twist and turn and do anything you want to do, but really find what you're passionate about, not because someone else says it, not because someone goes, oh, you should be on stage. None of that. You've got to find the grind and then not rewind.
Find the grind, then not rewind. What are you, Arthur? Gosh,
no. I know I've tried, but it's just... but yeah, that's the end.
The end. No, I agree, because the fitness identity is something that transition and grows over time. Because we kind of start off as like, you know, a generalist in fitness. You know, we join the challenge and we want to lose some body weight. We want to look good naked. Maybe we want to improve our health and maybe be able to have enough fitness that we can, you know, play with our kids or, you know, keep up with life, those types of things. So we start fitness on this generalist journey. And then as we progress, you know, we start to become a bit of a specialist. Okay, do you like the maybe triathlon side of fitness? Do you like the bodybuilding side of fitness? Do you like, you know, lifting heavy weights? Do you want to dabble in a few things? Do you want to dabble in one thing? And then your fitness identity slowly shapes over time. And then it becomes all encompassing, you know, the people around you, it becomes the people you spend time with, of course. You know, you start to have long-term plans and goals of where you want to be. And you start, you know, acting like a fitness person, and you start talking like a fitness person, you start thinking like a fitness person. And then, you know, you adopt this identity that kind of keeps you going. It keeps you almost on a track, on a path. And that identity can be very stereotypical, like I am a powerlifter, put my hand up, powerlifter, or I am, you know, Coach Steve, and I dabble in this, dabble in that. And, you know, I'm a bit of a unique identity, and that's okay as well. But, you know, you don't have to pigeonhole yourself into one identity forever. It can be something that is unique to you and grows over time. But like you said, Nick, it's worth reflecting on, you know, who are we? Who am I? Where do I fit in this thing?
I think so. And just one more thing that's really important. I think it's sort of, it's like, just because you believe that to be the best thing doesn't mean that other people believe that. So everybody's entitled to their own space within the fitness industry. And I don't think, I don't think that there's one specific way to do something. As long as you're safe and as long as you're keeping it healthy for you, it's happy days. I don't think that you need to don't listen to anyone that puts you down for doing what you're doing, is what I'm saying, because everybody's got a right to do what they want to do.
I like it. Nick.
Yes.
I want to continue my mini series from last week. Last week I offered hypertrophy tip number one, where we talked about stretch mediated hypertrophy. Ooh, fancy word. Go check that one out from last week. This week we have hypertrophy tip number two. And again, I was trying to think of a fancy clickbaity title here, Nick, but I went with understanding overload. Understanding overload. Is it sexy? I don't know, but it's probably arguably the most important principle around training. Well, technically the second most important principle, but it's arguably an important principle, understanding overload. And we're going to start here, Nick, by understanding a story or an analogy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So once upon a time, I wanted to learn how to play the piano.
Yep.
Okay. So I went out, purchased a piano and brought it home. It's just one of those like little keyboards, right? And I wanted to be able to play some songs, right? I wanted to be able to play for my family and my friends, you know, be able to be dexterous in another skill, and that was to play an instrument. So I started my journey, and I started with Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. You know that song? Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, right? And I learned how to play that on the piano, and that was simple. You know, I could play it with one finger. And it was very quick feedback. And if you get it wrong, it's like twinkle, dang, twinkle, dang. Like, you know, you press the wrong key, you know, straight away, right? So I needed to start a Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. I couldn't start with like, you know, Beethoven, right? I couldn't start at the very deep end because I was above my, you know, understanding of the piano. So I needed to start small. Then I couldn't just stay at Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star forever. You know, I needed to eventually progress into something more challenging. So then I slowly moved up into some Christmas carols, okay? So then I started to play things like Silent Night or, you know, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, right? And those types of songs. So it was around Christmas time. So I was there playing and I got a little bit better. So I was able to play with both fingers and maybe, you know, a couple of different fingers at a time. So over time, I was progressively making it more challenging to myself. So now that I was in that level of, oh, I could play maybe Christmas carols, me playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star or, you know, really basic things like chopsticks, that was below my, you know, progression, right? I couldn't just stay there forever. I needed something more advanced to there, right? I couldn't jump into Beethoven or I'd fail, right? Mm-hmm. So then I tried doing the Entertainer, okay? So that's a song. It's like, right? That type of song, right? Mm-hmm. I think I butchered that one, but that one was actually too high above my like level, right? So I couldn't even recall it to you right now. And that it was ended up leading me down a path where I couldn't get it done. So then I ended up like becoming less interested in the piano, and then ultimately led to failure of me learning how to play the piano super competently, in that I wanted to be able to play, you know, more advanced songs, but my approach to it was too rapid. Okay. Right. So that little analogy aside, we can follow a similar analogy through other like learning experiences. Let's say you wanted to learn an instrument, okay? Learn a language, okay? So let's say you wanted to learn Spanish, right? You could say hola, you know, hola, hi. And you could say hola so many times before you need to start learning new words to develop that Spanish ability. So you might learn something like, hola, mi nombre es Steven, right? Hi, my name is Steven, yeah? So you start learning some more challenging things that you might have to think and focus and learn, but then over time, you need to progress that more and more and more, not too fast that it fails, but you can't go back to the beginning because that stimulus isn't developing you further, okay? Now, what does that have to do with hypertrophy, right? Steven, you're talking about piano and failing piano, and you're talking about language and failing language. Yes, that is directly linked to our process of hypertrophy or building muscle, okay? So understanding overload is understanding the process of adding to the stimulus of training, because training is ultimately stimulating our body. We're not just completing a workout to make ourselves tired or to expend energy. We're trying to stimulate muscle growth occurring. Now, when we apply the stimulus, we can't have our stimulus too low where it's too easy. So, you know, you can't just go into the gym and say hola to people and hope muscles grow, or you can't go into the gym and start playing chopsticks and hope that your biceps get bigger. So we need to find a stimulus that makes it challenging for us that can stimulate muscle growth. So we think about that minimum stimulus as like the minimum threshold. Okay. So just over that tipping point where some adaptation occurs. Then on the other end, where a stimulus is too difficult or too challenging for us, where we fail. So for me, like the Entertainer or, you know, trying to have a conversation in Spanish, too difficult to me, would lead me to failing and not progressing because I didn't even get to try that. So that would be what we would call the absolute threshold, right? So absolute means failure, okay? It's done, it's over. And in the gym, that could be like me going up to, you know, a barbell with 500 kilos on it, and I try to lift it up. It's too high. It's going to fail. I'm going to fail at lifting that, or something's going to fail in my body. Okay. So we've got these two ends with the minimum threshold and then the absolute threshold. Within overload, we're trying to train within what we call the adaptive threshold. So the adaptive threshold lies in between the minimum and the maximum, between the minimum threshold and the absolute threshold, which is the adaptive threshold, where it's a stimulus that is just challenging enough that it disrupts like the normal, okay? So what we call homeostasis. So it's a stimulus that is challenging for us, maybe just beyond where we are now. So back to my example on the instrument. Let's say I'm competent at playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. I can't stay at Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star forever. I need to find a song or, you know, chords that are a little bit more challenging just outside of my skill set, but not too much that I'm going to fail. And that would be kind of like that adaptive threshold where I can focus, I can think. And if I'm like, you know, in the zone, I can play and learn and get better. And that is the adaptive threshold over time. So that is where we want to lie within our training. So often what happens is we go into training where we're going into stimulate muscle growth, but we don't like to kind of get into this adaptive threshold because it disrupts the norm. It disrupts homeostasis. It's challenging. It's hard. And that's when we get into this kind of like mind game experience with training, where sometimes we are kind of afraid of going harder, heavier, because it's more challenging, because we're getting closer to this like absolute failure. Absolute failure is not where we want to party, because that would lead to bigger failure where we're unable to do it. You know, me packing up my piano because I'm like, oh, screw this. I'm never going to be able to play the piano. And that was my experience with that. And the same thing can occur with our process to build muscle, okay? So the first thing would be to train within that adaptive threshold. And often that means that we're training close to muscular failure, where we're training close to those tissues being unable to perform another repetition. So it's challenging, you know, 8, 9, 10 out of 10 effort with our training. Then the next part of that is we want to historically improve over time. So if you are just training with your Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, you can't stay at Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. You want to gradually improve that or increase that over the previous history. And that would be over, let's say, the previous month. So if you've been training Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star for a month, you know, it'd be time to increase that, that stimulus. Now, we know that within training, we can be a bit specialized, where we might train, you know, let's say our arms 1 month and our legs 1 month, or focusing on these areas over time. So when we're trying to increase the stimulus over a history, over time, we want to try to relate that back to our previous month of training. So that might go into a little bit of that nerdy stuff. But the main takeaways with understanding overload is that, one, it needs to be challenging. Training needs to be challenging, and we're trying to stimulate that muscle over time. We want to go through a process of repeating that stimulus over time, but not forever, because historically we want to increase that stimulus's effectiveness of being a stimulus over time, so that we can stimulate that body to build muscle. So tip, Nick, there you go. Tip number two, understanding overload in my little mini hypertrophy mini series.
I love it. And also I'm glad that you said languages, because that's my initial background. I can speak French, Italian, and a bit of Japanese, but yeah, I found that with the Japanese in particular, because it's so different to the European languages, it's very much about just layering that a little bit at a time, you know, just enough. And yeah, that's a really good analogy. I liked it. Thank you very much.
Nick, we've got a few questions this week in our Q&A segment at the end here. So the first question is, what is the definition of an athlete?
Mm-hmm.
So Nick, how would you define an athlete?
Well, I'm looking at one. Well, actually, I can only see your picture. But yeah, apart from you, no, the definition, like the actual definition of an athlete, I'll tell you, and then I'll go into sort of my own theories on this. But so Wikipedia says an athlete is a person who competes in one or more sports that involve physical strength, speed, or endurance. The use of the term in several sports, such as golf or auto racing, becomes a controversial issue. Athletes may be professional or amateur. So, isn't that interesting? Because the sport itself, say, like, let's just say bodybuilding, you have to do stuff that involve, you know, strength, speed, endurance, or, you know, that sort of thing to get to the sport. But the sport itself, when you're actually on the stage, doesn't involve those particular things. So it's like, where's the delineation there? And then, the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition is a person who is trained or skilled in exercises, sports, or games requiring physical strength, agility, or stamina. So that's probably a little more lenient, because, well, the Wikipedia one could have been written by anyone who's like, well, that person's not an athlete. So, I would lean towards the one that you would say specifically skilled, I guess, in exercises. But just for our definition, to be honest, let's just peel it right back. It's somebody who lives and breathes fitness lifestyle. I think you can call yourself an athlete if you've got a vested interest in improving anything. In terms of a competitive athlete, that's probably a bit different. So what is what is a competitive sport? Is bodybuilding a sport? I want you all to, whoever's listening to the podcast, can actually, you know, you can debate this if you like in the group. Is it a competition that has a specific outcome, like a winner that's obvious, like a race, or, you know, lifting a particular weight? What skill is involved in the sport? It's very, very interesting. But for the purpose of this, I mean, both yourself and myself, we compete in things. But even if I wasn't, now I would have to still say that my lifestyle and the way that I approach things is all about progression. So I don't know, are you an athlete if you don't compete in things? What do you think?
Yeah, I would be leaning more towards that. An athlete is anybody who competes in a sport. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like the that would then go down to the definition of what is a sport, right? Hmm. But yeah, I would say that, yeah, let's say in bodybuilding, if it was going to the definition of either Wikipedia or the dictionary where it says, requiring physical strength, agility, or stamina. Nick, you've been on stage and posing. That takes quite a bit of stamina and endurance, right? Like,
correct.
You had to flex for, upwards of like 20 minutes, half an hour. That's hard. People faint, people collapse all the time, right?
Yeah. That's a whole different sport in itself. Like, once you get on the stage compared to what it takes to get on the stage. So it's like different components.
Yeah. I would say like the actual competing part of it, yeah, of course it's a sport because you're up there flexing, right? But then you kind of go, okay, well, it comes down to being judged on their appearance. And it's like, oh, well, is that too much different from like a beauty pageant? Is a beauty pageant a sport? I don't know.
That's where it becomes really tricky. And like, we don't have the definite answer, but there's heaps of podcasts that do debate this. It's really interesting in the fitness world to hear different people's takes on it.
Yeah, look, I would say that firstly, like, being defined as an athlete or not, probably not the most important thing going around. But then number two would be that, yeah, if you are following a structured training program where you're training for a goal, and that goal might be to be competitive in some way, that could be competitive in something like the challenge.
Yeah,
I would say that you're an athlete. Yeah, because you're training towards like a competition of some sort, right? Sure, it can get controversial, like things like car racing. I'm sure if you are a car racer out there, you probably understand that it is quite physically taxing. Then it goes beyond that, like, let's say sports such as chess. Some of those games can be so long and tiring that it takes lots of mental endurance to get through that people have to train for. So it's like, okay, is something like chess, are they athletes, right? Not in the traditional sense where we think an athlete is someone who is, muscular and fit and those types of things. That's what we stereotype it as. But via a definition, I would say anybody who competes and has a training plan or a strategy to compete, yeah, I'd say they're an athlete.
It's very interesting because, like, there's I reckon like a mental athlete versus a physical athlete, that's two different things.
Is it?
Yeah, that's what I don't know. I mean, look, I know that it takes a lot mentally, obviously, to compete, But then do you think that the physical stamina and endurance required for chess makes you an athlete?
Yeah. I mean, by my definition of someone who has a training plan and or a training strategy and goes into a competition in a sport, then it comes down to the definition of what is what defines a sport, different conversation. I would say that, yeah, that person's an athlete.
So really, all of our crew in the challenge, you're all athletes because you're competing for something.
That's right. Yeah.
How cool. Yeah. So if you didn't think you were an athlete, if you're listening to this podcast, you are an athlete.
That's right. And then when it comes down to when it comes down to professional or amateur, you know, professional would be someone who gets paid to do their sport. And, you know, guess what, Nick? The challenge has a prize.
Yeah.
Right. It has prize money. So if you have signed up to the challenge, you could say that you're a pro athlete because you are competitive to win a prize at the end.
How cool is that? So if you were having a crappy day, you can now define yourself as a pro athlete. Isn't that cool? I'm so glad.
Cool. Nick, next question here. Can someone tell me the difference between advanced tone and shape and get strong? If you've done both of them, which one was better and why? Okay, interesting. So this was a question posted to our Facebook social hub. Maybe more of a question is to understand maybe the differences between the two programs and everyone's experiences with those. Let's go down to the nuts and bolts of it. So the tone and shape program in general versus the get strong program in general, there's two main delineations. First one around training, and then the second one around the nutrition side of things. This person's asked the advanced tone and shape, maybe implying the training program, but let's talk about both. So in terms of the approach to nutrition, the tone and shape program is mainly geared towards weight loss. So that's via a calorie deficit. And that weight loss is hopefully leaning towards fat loss. Okay, so that's tone and shape. Whereas get strong is actually more towards the opposite. So get strong would be closely linked to weight gain or muscle gain. Okay, hopefully that weight that we're gaining is muscle. Now, we can see improvements in body composition in both. So if you are doing tone and shape, you might see some muscle gain, but the goal is mainly weight loss. And similar with get strong, the goal is mainly weight gain or muscle gain, but you might also lose a bit of body fat while you're gaining a bit of muscle. So that can occur concurrently, depending on your history. So if you are brand new to this, or if you're coming back after some time off of training, some of those things can happen side by side. But if you've been training for a while, it's very unlikely that you're going to see both at the same time. Nutrition side of things, again, we've got the tone and shape would be geared towards what's called a calorie deficit or an energy deficit. And then that's for tone and shape. And if we get strong, it's geared towards a calorie surplus or energy surplus to promote gaining muscle. So there is a clear difference between the two strategies in terms of nutrition. Now, when it comes to training, the training is mainly geared towards the idea of straight sets for get strong. So we've got one exercise to do your sets, second exercise to do your sets and move on. Whereas the tone and shape program introduces concepts such as a circuit or metabolic conditioning where we're doing four exercises back to back. So, you know, you can call it like a super set, you know, four exercises in a row. But the idea is that, you know, it's meant to stress the metabolic system of the body, give you a bit of a pump, get a bit of sweaty, challenge the cardiovascular system, all the tick boxes that can promote increased energy expenditure, leading towards a more significant energy deficit. So that's the two main differences, Nick. When it comes down to which one is better, well, what's better towards your goal? So if your goal is to lose some body fat, to lose some weight, tone and shape is better, of course. If your goal is to build some muscle, maybe to get a bit stronger, or even to put on a bit of size, get strong is better for you. So it comes down to the goal that you're wanting to follow. Nick, as we transition into the M challenge, we are kind of blurring the line more and more between these two concepts, because we know that when it comes down to training, ultimately what's important is that you enjoy training. Okay. So it doesn't matter too much if it's straight sets or supersets or giant sets or whatever it is. This is something that we enjoy and that it can stimulate muscle growth. Because regardless of the goal, we're trying to stimulate muscle or we're trying to maintain as much muscle as we can. So if we are going through a weight loss phase, if you can stimulate muscle and maintain your muscle, you primarily will be losing fat rather than losing fat and muscle or losing as much weight as you can. So the M challenge, call it the muscle challenge if you need to, is geared more towards stimulating muscle. So you'll find that the programs have a nice blurring of them where you may find that there'll be limited training programs, maybe more built around the frequency or the duration of workouts or around the equipment available. So less goal-specific training, more environmental-specific training. The big delineation will be coming down to your strategy with nutrition. So if you wanted to follow a toner shape style program, choose a training program you enjoy. And then with nutrition, we're choosing an energy deficit or a calorie deficit. If you wanted to follow a get strong style training program, follow any training program that you enjoy and then follow a calorie surplus style nutrition plan. So that'll be the future of the M challenge. And some of these programs such as Tone and Shape and Get Strong, Lean and Rip, Size and Strength may be pushed to the side. Some of the names of those activities, introducing new concepts around training.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's simple is best, really. That's the thing. You don't want to overcomplicate it. It's just exactly as you said.
That's right. And Nick, even like for someone like yourself, you know, if you are going through a building phase and then as you transition into either maintenance or even a weight loss phase, your training program probably wouldn't change too much. You might change a few exercises, you know, instead of doing a deadlift, you might do a sumo deadlift, or instead of doing a chin-up, you might do a lat pull down, or, you know, just to add some variety in your training.
Mm.
But the actual training on your approach to training would probably still stay very, very, very with multiple very similars. But the biggest change would be your approach to your nutrition as you kind of go through either your muscle building phase or your weight loss phase.
Definitely. Well, it's my pre-prep has just started in the last week or so. So it's just calories have just come down, but everything else is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else at the moment. It'll probably get harder as we go, but yeah, we're in a good position. So it's just that's all that's manipulated at the moment, because we want to maintain as much muscle as possible, and that is done by basically talking but by doing exactly what you were talking about before. So
Nick, next question here. Why does the deload template have a 2-week option? Nick.
Because you are allowed to deload for 2 weeks if you want to. But it completely depends on your level of training, what you actually want, you know, how hard you've been going. Often if you've been in a huge calorie deficit, your body needs time to recover from that. Often you can take quite a few, I don't want to say forever, but you can, if you're quite advanced, you can take a bit of time off, a few weeks off. And we're not saying completely off. That's the whole thing. It's not deload isn't stop doing everything. It's just reduce the training volume, reduce the load, that sort of thing. Or the other thing is try something completely different as well. So there's no really hard and fast rule that it just needs to be 1 week. People say deload week, but you can have a couple of weeks. I reckon over Christmas, I'll just use myself as an example. I didn't set foot in the gym for 2 weeks. And maybe the first couple of days when I got back, I was like, oh, this feels a bit yucky. But then I was even stronger than when I left. So you do need to actually give your body time to recover. That's the thing. As long as you're training hard in terms of, you're progressing within your own framework, then, absolutely, it's fine to take a couple of weeks off.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like you said, Nick, it depends on a few factors. You know, 12 weeks can be a long time to train. And if you were trying to be competitive in the challenge, you may have been training at a high intensity and you're really pushing your limits. So maybe after 12 weeks of hard training, gosh, maybe you are just physically tired, or you don't know that you're tired. So once you take a little bit of time off, you're like, oh, geez, my body's just kind of caught up to me. So you may only require a weekend and you feel great. Maybe what I'd recommend is at least a week, because you might find after the weekend, you know, other things can happen. So, you know, just hold out for a week. or you may even find 2 weeks. Now, I will also touch on and say that deloads is this concept of decreasing volume by, you know, a third or a half. Now, volume can be the total amount of sets. So, you know, instead of doing 10 sets per workout, you might do 5, or instead of doing, you know, 100 sets a week, you might do, you know, 50, or reduce by a third, maybe, you know, 60 sets per week. Or you can keep the sets the same and reduce the total intensity, in referring to how much load you use. So instead of squatting 100 kilos, you might squat 70 kilos or 50 kilos, right? Or you can do a mixture of both. Now, you know, you could deload for a longer period of time, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. What you could do is just use deload volume, so fewer sets, but then train at the same intensity that you do. So if you normally squat 100 kilos, you squat 100 kilos, but instead of doing 4 sets, you do 2 sets. Or instead of doing 3 sets, you do just 2 sets, right? So you just scale it back slightly so that you decrease the total amount of stimulus that you place on your body, allowing, you know, things to catch up. And deloads can be really structured, like we're suggesting in the challenge. You finish challenge it after 12 weeks, then you do a deload. Or it could be a little bit what we call ad hoc. So maybe you get to, let's say, week 3 or 4 of the next challenge, and it's a really stressful week. So, you know, your kids are going back to school, you've got some deadlines at work, you know, other things are happening in your life. It's really tiring, and you're feeling the pressure from training, and you choose to take a deload. So you just decrease the total amount of sets that you do so that you can still maintain life without kind of going too overboard, and you're not starting to, you know, start playing Beethoven when you're still at Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. So that's where deload can become helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the deeper you get into training, the more you appreciate the deload as well, I think. And sometimes it's a bit weird, because at first you think, if I stop, I'll never get started again. But then after a couple of days, you realize that it's such a good thing, so good for you. And then when you come back after the deload and you realize that you're stronger, every time it's like you forget that that's going to happen, like a long haul flight or something, you know, you go, wow, this is something that I forgot about. But it's amazing. It's amazing. So highly recommend, don't you?
Oh, yes. I do recommend just taking a little bit of time off so you can rebuild, grow, and come back even stronger.
Yep.
Absolutely. Nick, last question here. Mm-hmm. How do I know what calories and macros to follow for maintenance? Okay. So firstly, we'll have to define maintenance. Maintenance is where your body weight is stable. So at most, you might be having small fluctuations of maybe 0.5% each week as a most, up and down. So if your body weight is, let's say, 100 kilos and you want to go through maintenance, you might go to, you know, 100.5 kilos up, or you might go down to 99.5 kilos down, but you might kind of fluctuate, you know, 0.5% up or down from 100 kilos. So that's what we would define as maintenance. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when it comes down to what calories should you follow, well, you'd want to find a calorie intake where your body weight stays stable. Now, you can't be 100% certain what that caloric number is, okay, because, you know, each week you may have scaling physical activity levels. So, you know, maybe one particular week you decide to go for a hike on the weekend, the next week you decide to stay at home and watch Netflix because you just kind of got into the latest season of whatever is popular at the moment.
Better Call Saul. I love that.
Yes, a little Breaking Bad spin-off, Better Call Saul.
Do you like it? Have you seen it?
I have not seen Better Call Saul, but I did thoroughly enjoy Breaking Bad.
You need to watch it, sorry, but you just need to watch it. I'm telling you.
So, you know, your calorie intake can scale up and down. And that's ideally in maintenance what you should be doing. So if you are kind of breaking that 0.5% scaling up and down of your body weight, so let's say if you go up to, let's use something like 102 kilos on one particular week, maybe you reflect and go, oh, I did have, you know, pizza and beer on the weekend, then I caught up with my buddy and had some more burgers, and I sat on the couch all week. Okay, no wonder my body weight's going up to 102. Maybe that next week you just need to readjust your caloric intake so that you stay within your maintenance preference. So that maintenance number of calories can kind of move, but you know, you can find some good starting points by just utilizing, you know, a calculator online, or hopefully you've just completed the challenge and you're looking at your nutrition workbook and you've either followed the recovery diet back to maintenance, or you can select maintenance as your goal on the very start of the nutrition workbook. Now, when it comes down to macros, what macros should I follow? First thing I'd say is macros really are a preference. It's up to you. My advice would be to prioritize protein. So aiming for about 2 grams per kilo of body weight is a rough target. You know, if you go a little bit over, a little bit under, no dramas, that's cool, but aiming for around that 2 grams per kilo of body weight. And then when it comes down to the carb and fat ratio, again, it really comes down to your personal preference. So you may enjoy, you know, that low carb diet, you might prefer a low fat diet, or you might prefer a nice balance between the both, a balance between both of them. We see massive success in either preference that you choose. Again, it just comes down to what you enjoy, what kind of fits around your lifestyle. And, you know, some individuals enjoy, you know, hard and fast rules, like saying, oh, I want to really restrict my carbohydrate intake for whatever reason, but maybe they enjoy that rule of saying, all right, I'm going to cut down my carbs because that's the rule I'm going to follow and it keeps me adherent. Great. That's fine as well. So when it comes down to what calories and macros for maintenance, the answer is it depends. It depends on your preference. It depends on how your body weight moves up and down, because that number can change over time.
And how cool is it that every single answer is always, it depends?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know why? You know why, Nick?
Because we don't have all the answers and everyone's so different. If someone says that they've got all the answers, that's when you have to run.
That's right. That's right.
You've got to run as fast as you can.
You know, a few things I would comment on would be like, one, like the very first, when it comes to fitness, first thing I'd say is it's down to principles, right? It's about principles of fitness. You know, there's no one strategy that's the best. It's all that works under the umbrella of a principle. Next would be the first most important principle is the principle of specificity, right? Being true to our goal or where we want to go towards. So every one of the questions that we ever face in the challenge really comes down to, okay, how are we defining what we're talking about? So, you know, maintenance, how are we defining that? And, you know, what is your ultimate goal, the outcome of where you want to go to? And that kind of changes because we need to be specific to, you know, what we're trying to do. The second most important principle is that principle of overload, which we spoke about in our coach's corner. So 1-2. So if it ever comes down to is someone asking you, oh, what's the best for this? Or what should I do for this or that? And maybe you've just done the challenge, you've lost some weight and someone comes up to you, oh my God, you did this amazing. I heard that if I eat almonds while standing on my head, it's really good for weight loss. You know, should I do it? Okay. What advice are you going to give to that person? Well, it depends. What's your goal? Are you trying to lose weight? Okay. Almonds are really high in calories. Are you going to sit there and eat a kilo of almonds? Probably not a good idea. Why are you eating it while you're standing on your head? Okay. If you want to be like a monkey, sure, that's you. Good. So it really comes down to it depends all the time, Nick.
Yes. You could be like 50 Cent at the Super Bowl entertainment thing. You know how he was upside down. That's, you can eat that. You know why that would work? Because they probably wouldn't be able to go down your gullet properly.
And it'll just come out after you eat it.
Yep. Oh, anyway, yes.
Amazing. Look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 63 of the Challenge Weekly Show.
Yes.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can check out our 62 other episodes. And yeah, if you are hanging around in places like iTunes, you can leave us a review, you can leave us a message. And if you have a question for us that we can answer in the Q&A section, you can always drop us a question in the link in the notes section at the bottom of this podcast.
Absolutely, absolutely. And don't forget to let us know if you've been listening. We love that. That's our favorite thing.
Yes, you can debate if you're an athlete or not.
Yes, please do. And, you know, just do it secretly so people go, what are you talking about? That's my favorite thing.
Guerrilla marketing. I love it.
Secret club.
Yes, we'll catch you next week for episode number 64.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.